This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work without the right payments API, and that's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 263 for Friday, November 20th, 2015. How goes it? I'm Phil Nickinson. Welcome to the show. So we had a lot of people last week say they really enjoyed the format of the show. And if you haven't listened to it yet, you totally should, because it was one of those shows where we just didn't plan at all and just kind of showed up and talked about stuff. So I worked really hard for the past 5 or 6 minutes and have prepared this same show the exact same way. That is, I haven't done a damn thing to get ready for it. So.
Absolutely genius.
It's going to be another one of those. I mean, not that we don't have things to talk about. So welcome if it's your first time. We do this once a week, generally live. Though we are starting to get into the weird U.S. holiday season. You're welcome, Alex. I didn't, blanket our Thanksgiving holiday to everybody, which means occasionally we will either not record live or maybe record early or live. We'll see. Like next week, we're not going to have a live show. We're going to record early, but it'll be interesting. It'll be something a little different. That way we can all, take Friday off. So I have to watch my kids or something important, I've been told.
I have to do some important things too.
What are you doing?
Drinking.
Oh, well, fair enough. Jerry Heldenberry and everybody.
Howdy.
That's not unimportant. Russell, you're in the sunbeam today.
Yep.
And then, because it's the winter, by the time the podcast ends, he'll be shrouded in darkness.
Right. It'll be pitch black. By the
These are like the two sides of Russell Holly right there. The light and the dark.
50 shades of Russell.
Russell should do a Star Wars podcast where at the beginning you're all like Jedi-y and toward the end you're just killing everybody.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Kind of that sounds just like a regular podcast to me.
Well, that's true. Alex Dobie.
Hi.
Welcome.
How you doing?
You left us last week, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I was still in Amsterdam last week for the big Android barbecue Europe edition.
It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good. It's kind of the first time they've done this outside the US. It was a lot of fun. A lot of smart people talking about things that I kind of understand, but I think I had a better understanding of by the end of it. And of course, won't be a big Android barbecue without a big barbecue, so that was fun as well.
Barbecue place opened up. Literally, it's like where's my finger? It's like 30 yards that way, right on the other side of this wall. I can't
Dangerous
wait
to, and also magnificent.
I got to go there next week. I can't wait. So, what should we talk about? I tell you what, it's been a little while since we did voicemails first thing, and we only have two this week, so why don't we just do them if you want to. And you can take your time, because again, we're not going to record live next week. Email us, record your voice, and just send it to podcast@androidcentral.com. And seriously, I was not complaining a minute ago, but just noting the inordinate amount of people who record messages on their watches for this. It baffles me. Now, I say that because I got this giant microphone in front of me, I guess, but it just seems weird. Maybe not? No?
I mean, they've got the tools. They might as well use them. I think it's cool, especially when they turn out to be so clear.
Can't tell if sarcastic or...
I'm going to podcast through my watch.
No, I'm serious. We've gotten a couple of these recordings that have been really, really...
They're kind of hit and miss. Like they're either really good and you couldn't tell, or...
I mean, it's kind of the same with... Go ahead.
Well, if they're recording on their watch while they're like on their morning jog or, driving in a convertible or something, it's going to sound pretty gross. But if you're sitting in a quiet room and you're just talking into your wrist, why not?
I'm just trying to imagine someone out for a morning jog like this talking into their wrist about smartphones to people who aren't there.
Hey, guys, I have a question. Or I was going to say, in Andrew's world, everyone's in a convertible, apparently.
Well, I don't know. People are crazy around Seattle because it's never really convertible weather. But yeah. People still buy convertibles anyway, so.
And with that, let's do a voicemail. do I remember how to do this? It's been a whole week.
Is this thing on? Where are my pants?
Where are my pants? Honey! First up, we got Damon. So let's give this a shot. Cross fingers.
Hey guys, Damon here from New Jersey, longtime listener. Love your podcast. Yeah, I had a quick question. I know that there's been Google engineers talking a lot about the USB-C cords you can buy from various vendors, OnePlus and Monoprice or whatever, and I understand the reasons why you shouldn't use them, but I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to if a person like myself went out and bought the correct cord from Google that should have come with the 5X, that came with the 6P, the Type-A to type C adapter, because we have car chargers, we have chargers all over the place. Would it hurt anything to take one of the correct cords and plug it into any of my old chargers, maybe a quick charge 2.0 car charger, or just a high amperage iPad charger, just anything like that? Just wondering if you could speak to that for a minute. Anyway, thank you. Bye.
Don't do it.
Ask Google.
I'm
really.
All right, now Jerry knows about this stuff, and he's been kind of.
That's why I'm very reluctant to talk about it, because I don't want to be responsible. Somebody asked before about damaging the wire, and I tried to answer that. But you can damage more than the wire. You can damage the power supply. You can damage the power supply enough for it to catch fire, burn your house down, and crack your fish tank, and your goldfish are all dead. I mean, it can get bad.
And when we say power supply, we mean potentially a laptop that costs several times as much as the phone.
Whatever you're plugging the fat end of the cord into can catch fire if things aren't exactly right. The safe side of me reluctantly says you should ask Google and let Google be on the hook. The side of me that says, bro, okay, cool, let's have a beer and talk about this. If you buy the right cable as in the correct wires inside, if it's using a pull-up resistor, the correct resistor, the correct plating on the contacts, everything is correct, and we've got a good idea of the cables that are correct, I would not hesitate to plug it in to my laptop or to my vehicle charger or to any quick charger. But that's me. If you want an official recommendation from Android Central, I would have to tell you only use a charger and a cable that you can buy from Google on the phone you can buy from Google, and then wink and tell you that I don't do that. I just don't want anybody to get hurt. It'd be my fault.
I guess the bigger question is this something where is this just the way the USB Type-C world is going to be, where, in previous years you had to kind of worry about plugging your phone into like a dodgy off-brand charger that could potentially do damage, like burn down your house, blow up your phone. Is this just going to be something we have to deal with in wires now? And is that just going to be something that people have to adjust their mindset to?
Well, there's two things. Number one, it's going to get worse because the USB Type-C standards haven't been finalized yet. So the version we see in 3 months may be different than what we're seeing now. Shouldn't be, but could be.
But you can still put that same wire into it, right?
Right. The connector ends themselves aren't going to change, and that's what could cause more problems, because the cable will fit even if you shouldn't be using it.
And so Google kind of got around this a tiny bit on the 5X by just having the C2C cable, and the power brick only has a USB-C port on it, but it gets a little hairy when they include an A to C cable that you can plug into, a computer or any other wall charger.
And they're not making it any better by their own. And it's not Google's proprietary fast charging. It's somebody else invented this, but it's less license encumbered, I guess, is why they're using it. But it's different from any charger you're going to find easily. You can't just go buy a Qualcomm 2.0 quick charger and it's not going to work. It's a different set of standards that provides different amounts of current and different electricity. That was a horrible way to say that, but it does. It provides different current, different voltage, different wattage.
And so is it unrealistic for me to expect, I just double-checked my Nexus 6P box here, should they have something written in the box on the, that top sheet of paper that comes out that do not use this cable with another brick? Or
I think we've kind of had those warnings for power supplies, haven't we, in the past, like only use with the stuff that came with your phone, and that's kind of their get out liability wise if you do plug something in that damages the hardware or damages you or anything in between.
Well, I almost want to say that if you have a correctly built cable that is designed to work with the way that your new Nexus phone wants to fast charge, you'll be fine plugging it into anything that provides USB voltage. But I can't. I mean, I would do it. I'm confident enough that I've got a cable here. I bought, I did my own investigation. It turns out, and I'm going to butcher his name, so I'm not going to say it. Somebody, who's the guy from Google, Brandon, that he's going around at Amazon, and he's checking these cables and giving recommendations. The one I did my own little check on, he agrees with, and it's fine. I use that puppy everywhere. Sometimes it says rapid charging, sometimes it doesn't, but it works, and nothing's ever gotten hot enough to burn anything.
And I think it is getting a little muddier where I've plugged the 5X into all kinds of different power outlet, you know, and external batteries and things. Sometimes it says rapid charging, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it charges quickly even when it, you know, even when it says it's not, or sometimes it charges slowly even though it says it's charging rapidly. And it feels like it's a little bit in the gray area where Google just won't put its foot down on anything other than its own charger. So what is it going to say?
The flip side of this, I have a no name. It just says iPad charger that I got for like $1.50 from eBay. And it's got a USB port on it, and I can plug the correct cable and my Nexus 6P into it, and that charger gets so hot I can't lay my hands on it. So
yeah, well, that sounds
it can like be a charger. Thing. Yes.
Charger needs to be thrown in the river.
Right. So, I mean, it is something to be concerned about, and good on you for asking. Unfortunately, I don't have the best answer in the world to give you.
What about this? Because when I'm at home, I'm not using a high amperage charger or anything. I've got, I don't know if they still ship with them. A couple years ago, Motorola was shipping with a 2 USB plug, and it was great. Yeah, it
comes with the Moto X player.
Does it still? Okay.
Cool, yeah.
And I love that because I charge my tablet and my phone next to my bed, and I really wish I didn't do that anymore. I was a lot happier when I had them in another room. But really handy plug. But it's not a high amperage plug. So,
and just for overnight charging, you don't really care if it's a
right, exactly.
high amperage plug.
See that? But the thing is if the cable is not correct, your Nexus can force that charger to output at dangerous levels.
Gotcha.
More than the cable can handle.
Well, more than the charger itself can handle. Cables are one side of the story, and that was my biggest concern at the beginning until I started taking some cables apart and looking inside. There's all three variables. Your phone is probably going to be safe regardless. The circuitry in your phone is going to keep it from actually getting hot enough to catch fire and burn.
Unless it catches fire to the house that happens to also contain your phone. Right.
The cable and the charger, on the other hand, a high quality, I mean, you can go to Amazon. It's a company called iOrange. They make a very nice 6-foot-long braided USB-C cable that's got the correct size wires, the correct pull-up resistors, and it works perfect with the Nexus included charger, and it should be safe on every other charger, but should be is the key word there.
It's a good question.
So is there a device side solution to this, right? Is it possible to have something either in Android itself or in all future devices to kind of counteract and stop the phone pulling down more than it's safe? Or is that the job of the cable?
That's the cable in conjunction with the charger, because they're using a resistor to pull the voltage up and the amperage up. It's hard to... I mean, what we need is a smart charger. That's what we need. We need chargers to have... They don't need to have a display or anything, but they need to have circuitry inside that can self-regulate and cost $2 more. That would fix everything.
I thought that's
what... And that's quick charge, right?
But they don't have the right. Mm-hmm. We can regulate what we... You know, this is what it's designed to use as far as cables and devices. And as long as you're using the right cable and the right device, our charger will be safe. But they can go a step further and make the charger just monitor and regulate everything. In fact, they do with Qi chargers.
Why is it so hard?
Money. Mm. It's not easy to reinvent. A charger is a pretty simple device. It's just got a few parts in it. None of them are moving. When you go to reinvent that, you have to spend a lot of money.
It's ridiculous. I mean, this whole...
Oh. I dreaded the move to USB-C because I knew there would be issues. I didn't know there would be safety issues until it actually became a thing.
I don't remember us having these problems when we went from mini to micro.
Well, because that was just a connector change. Yeah. This is a complete specifications change. And it's for the good. And in 2 years, we'll look back and we'll forget all about this and everything will be fine. And then you'll just have Samsung, Motorola, Qualcomm, and everybody else trying to tout whose quick charging method is best. But they'll all be safe.
Well, I mean, they're doing that now.
But yeah.
Fine.
We didn't really answer his question. And I'm sorry, but there's no easy answer, at least from me, there's no easy answer. Somebody else may be more confident than I am. And if so,
not to be all doom and gloom, but you say two years. I think maybe forgetting the fact that there are a lot of different things besides phones that use micro USB, right? You have speakers, in-ear earphones, those kinds of things, batteries, you know, smartwatches, everything, you know, that is smaller and connected and has a chip in it basically uses micro USB now. And maybe for some of those devices, there's not going to be the push in the same way there is for high-end phones towards this new standard. So we're going to be juggling cables for quite some time, I think, probably more than just a couple of years.
I still have one device that I carry around everywhere that uses mini USB. That's that tiny little microphone I use.
Microphone, yeah.
Yeah.
The EU can fix it, Alex.
And I
have faith.
And I think about, especially Alex brought up the battery point. You know, I have lots of batteries with integrated micro USB cables on them, and you know, those just are useless now.
What are we going to do with our Samsung Panda chargers when USB Type-C?
I have one from like the Note 4 era, actually, that has like the faux leather on it, which is probably even better than...
It's probably better that's getting obsoleted.
Pretty sweet, like, fake stitching on there. That's pretty awesome, right?
My kids love the Panda charger, by the way.
So glad I could dump that on you guys. I have too many batteries. Holy cow.
All right, one more. Yeah, and too bad nobody's ever going to make any more batteries, right?
No.
All right, one more voicemail. This is from our friend Jean-Paul on his wrist.
Hi guys, this is Jean-Paul coming to you live on my Asus ZenWatch 2. I have a Chromebook question for you guys. I'm considering picking up my first Chromebook as a secondary laptop. I have a full Windows laptop. And I've read your reviews, which are really good. I know you guys usually recommend the higher RAM option to be able to keep more tabs and web apps in memory. But I wasn't sure what I needed in terms of storage options. I know a lot of the Chromebooks come in either 16 or 32 gigs. I'm not sure what's getting stored on the Chromebook and how much storage I need. Do Chrome apps store data on the Chromebook? I mean, I'm not storing documents on it. It'll all be in the cloud. I'm also interested in running ArcWelder on it and seeing if I could get some Android apps running on it. I guess, does that affect my purchasing decision? Do I need something with a little more processing power? Do I need more storage? Anyway, keep up the good work, guys. I appreciate the help. Thanks. Bye.
If you're using ArcWelder, you should consider more than 16 gigs of storage just because you're going to have you don't know the size of the APKs you're looking at. You probably know the first couple, but you're not going to know anything beyond that, and those are going to add up along with anything that you try to download. You say you store everything in the cloud, but when you go to download a photo to share somewhere else or something like that, all that gets dealt with locally in the meantime. So,
and your file system on Chrome OS is integrated with Google Drive, so you can have like documents and offline docs and email and things that all gets periodically cached onto your internal storage as well. If you're just talking about like movies or photos or whatever, all the Chromebooks have micro SD slots on them. You can hide a little card in there, but if you're installing Android apps, that's not going to be the way to go. You're going to have the internal storage. 32 is going to be fine even in that case. I don't think there are many Chromebooks that offer more than 32 gigs anyway. But if you can find the 32 gig option, I think, and usually that'll be coordinated with getting a 4 gig of RAM option as well. So those two will go hand in hand, and I think that's a better choice.
What about SD card support? Is Chrome OS doing anything kind of crazy like Marshmallow is doing, where you have this adaptable storage and can...
It just works. It's just a drive. It's a separate folder in your file, like your file manager.
If I were buying a new Chromebook today, the first thing I would look for is touchscreen support because ArcWelder. period. Android apps with a mouse, some of them work great. Some of them just don't. When you need to long press or swipe, you will be happy you have touch support. And if your favorite app needs it and you want to run it on your Chromebook, you're going to need a touch screen.
And, I mean, I don't want to get your hopes up too high about how great Arc Welder is going to be in running all your Android apps on Chrome, but I think the best option for you there would be the Asus Chromebook Flip, because it can flip over and just use a touchscreen as a good screen and a good touchscreen, and it's relatively small and portable. So I think that's a good choice, and I think they offer a 32 gig of storage option there as well.
And it's been a while since I messed with Arc Welder, and I actually just fired it up while we were here talking, but it's still not the same as like natively running an Android app somewhere. It's one at a time.
I would caution you against buying a Chromebook expecting to use that as your main app platform at this. And honestly, I mean, not to rain on your parade completely, but running, you know, the apps from the web store, you know, don't expect the world from those either. There are a couple good options for various different things, especially like text editors and stuff like that. They're, you know, productivity stuff. But as far as games and rich content apps, don't expect that from the web store or Arc Welder, really.
And I know we've been saying this for 2 years or longer, but it is not a crazy idea to buy a Chromebook with the idea in mind that Android apps are going to be running on it probably sooner than we think. And I mean, in a real way.
That comes back to the whole Pixel C thing, right?
It goes back to what they showed running in a more native than Arc Welder kind of way more than a year ago at I.O. 2014, right?
That's the dream, isn't it? Right. That has not been forgotten. Maybe it hasn't been realized as quickly as we look. Pardon me. But that's not forgotten. There are people doing things. And that's why I stress the importance of a touchscreen. I personally never use a touchscreen on my laptop, but if I were installing a bunch of Android apps on it, I may want to. Other than that, what these guys said is, the only thing I could add is if you've got a Chromebook, it is so easy to run a full-blown Linux desktop on it. You type in one thing after you've unlocked it, and you reboot and it's there. That's more reason to get more storage and more RAM. So there are no drawbacks to going that route.
Should see my kids when they grab one of the MacBooks in the house after using a Pixel all day, stab it at the screen. Guys, don't touch it.
So many fingerprints.
I know. Well, that was a long-winded answer to that. Good job.
Well,
hey, not as long as the USB answer.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
No, that was good. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I don't even know how to describe this. We'll call it the watch that never was. How about that?
Non-watch.
Non-watch. Hang on. We'll be right back. Winter is coming, and not just in Westeros, and you're going to need a good pair of boots. And for a long time, we've been forced to decide between clunky work boots or delicate fashion boots, or over-branded boots that fall apart after a couple of wears, or boots that are way out of our price range. Well, the Thursday Boot Company exploded onto the scene last year with the perfect boots for work and play. They sent me a pair a couple weeks ago to try out, and that's absolutely the case. Remember, I'm in Florida. It's tough enough to get me to wear socks, maybe shoes, never mind full-on boots. But Thursday boots are surprisingly comfortable. Now, I work at a standing desk and had no problem putting in a full day's work of 2 or 3 hours. Now, longer than that. Really, I'm totally surprised at how good these feel. And seriously, these are good-looking, comfortable boots that don't break the bank or your ankles. They're durable, they're sophisticated and versatile. Thursday boots are handcrafted from some of the best leather. It's tier 1 grade A USA cattle, and for you cows out there that don't meet that specification, I still love you. They've got a Goodyear weld construction, glove leather interior lining, a cork bed insole that molds to your foot over time, and I love that. And they've got a low profile studded rubber outsole for difficult terrain or slippery bar rooms. And with prices starting at $149 and free shipping and returns, Thursday boots are best buy this winter. Head on over to thursdayboots.com/android to see a selection of our favorites. Thursday Boots, perfect for work and play. Which one of you is clicking? One of you is clicking. I can see it. Like in the waveform.
I hear it, so it's not me.
Nobody's mic is clicking.
It's like the heartbeat of the podcast. I'm leaving it in there.
I'm guessing it's Phil.
I know. It's great radio, right?
When Phil blames somebody, that means it's probably
That's
him.
Entirely possible. So the LG Watch Urbane, very unceremoniously.
Second edition LTE.
Second edition. Yeah, sorry. LTE. The one with the cell radio in it that's running Marshmallow and was the only watch running Marshmallow. Is
and
dead.
The only cellular watch. Like, this is the weird thing about this. So it, I mean, we'll get into what exactly happened later, but basically this thing isn't coming out. It looks like it might not ever come out.
But it was out. People have it.
People have it, but it's like, here's this, you know, this is basically the reference device for an Android Wear watch with cellular radio. And, you know, as well as being the first one with Marshmallow. And, you know, you got to imagine there's going to be some development stuff that needed to happen on there. And now that device just doesn't exist for all intents and purposes, right?
Yeah, and you had, I mean, it was LG, AT&T, Verizon, and Google all together here because Google was launching this new version of Android Wear, and the carriers were on board for connected watches. LG was excited about it, and then they decided to call it off.
I like to think there's a drawer somewhere with Verizon Nexus 1s and HTC merges.
Oh,
and,
look, no, these manufacturers have drawers of all kinds of stuff.
Well, the difference here was that this was on sale in stores, on the displays next to the LG phones and next to the Gear S2 with LTE, and on sale for what, like a week?
I think I can say this. Most, actually, 100% of the guesses I've seen are incorrect about why this happened, and that's really all I can say about that.
Which I want to LG needs to say something.
I think they do. Yeah.
If they're going to make hints and drop, you know, stuff that, oh, you can't say this, then they just need to come out and tell everybody who's already plugged my.
Because
they said it was a QA problem, which means it's hardware.
You're right. No, well, I mean, they said it was a hardware problem.
Well, I mean, of course, it's hardware.
Something late, you know, that they discovered late. You know, so it's some kind of hardware thing that somewhere down the road is going to go bad.
My interesting thought about it is that right now, I mean, a lot of the speculation that I'd seen is people have been lumping AT&T and Verizon with the blame, like it was their certification problem or their LTE problem.
Or they're
like,
mad because it was unlocked, which doesn't make sense because
right, so,
It's the same logic that blames Lenovo every time Motorola does something wrong. It's the boogeyman, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. So I'm surprised that AT&T and Verizon aren't, well, maybe they are, yelling at LG and saying, hey, come on, this isn't our fault. Why are you...
Well, they're,
you
know, they're going one better and sending everyone to the Gear S2, aren't they? So
I already know, I can already tell you guys what the problem was. What the problem, they discovered long-term that if you wear this thing for longer than like 3 weeks, then you chew your own arm off. because it's friggin' insufferable.
Right, there's the other side of it that it just wasn't a great product, it seems.
No, for the people who have it, like, go on our forums, they love it.
Yeah, they're wrong.
Well, I mean, it's not a lot of people. But...
Come on, Phil, people love the original Gear S, too.
The thing, though, there are people in our forums that love it, and I've already seen several people say, I'm keeping it. I can take care of whatever the problem is. No, send that sucker back.
Look.
Hardware problem means it's either going to stop working or it's not safe. Either one, get your money back now.
Are these the same people that are hilariously worried? You know, they're worried at the same time about their USB-C cables, but they're going to hold on to their recalled watch.
If they found a problem long term, it's not good. It's not something you're going to be able to fix.
And this is something that is attached to your body. I mean, really, this is extra dangerous.
Well, I mean, it's at the end of your body, so like if you lose from here down.
It's just your hand. Yeah.
I lost one
of those. It's cool.
There's one going for $900 on eBay right now.
I've got a couple extra rubber hands here.
Not a hand, one of the watches.
Oh, I could put this on eBay? That didn't even occur to me.
No. Yeah, guys, send it.
I changed my mind. This thing is awesome.
This is a little Pollyanna, but if you respect the company and the players involved enough about this, do them the service of taking care of it, even if
it's $500 back.
Yeah,
and do something realistic with it.
Buy beer for Friday. That's a lot of beer.
You could buy a regular, you know, Wi-Fi watcher bane and a bunch of beer for Thanksgiving.
I mean, look, this is not going to be. I don't think we're never going to see another Android Wear cellular watch at this point, right? I mean, they just put the SDK out for it yesterday, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Google's prepared for this.
That's important.
Okay, so the SDK's out there. They were planning on the hardware being out there.
Sure.
You don't know where along the line, you know, whoever else has a watch planned is actually going to have it out there. So you could potentially have, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was until next year now that we just don't have hardware for this stuff.
But you don't do an SDK if you're planning a one-off, right?
Right. And
oh, sure, yeah.
It was a hardware issue with that particular model.
The only model.
Right. That doesn't mean that the platform is changing and that's going away. It's just one device that happens to be the only model.
I mean, look, it's a hardware issue, which means it has nothing to do with Android, right?
Yeah.
And you got to respect, I mean, at least I do. You don't have to. You got to respect LG for just taking this one on the chin and saying, hey, we screwed up. If you bought one, take it back. We're not going to sell it anymore. We'll see you next time.
Again, to be a little Pollyanna about it, you've got a computer on your wrist that can make phone calls from basically anywhere. I mean, this is magic stuff to me. I think it's magic.
I think it's garbage.
Magic is maybe going a bit far. But.
Where's your sense of whatever, Russell?
It's at the end of my wrist where the watch has been. Guess what? You have to use the adult flag for this podcast now.
Have you guys ever heard how I bleep those out?
No.
You might not have. You'll have to go find it.
Is it with a hangout sound just to mess with people?
that would be really good, actually. I should do do do. Or I should change every curse word to okay, Google.
Yeah.
poor watch. Everyone keeps trying this connected watch thing. And I still remember the first Samsung one calling my wife from like 30 floors up in New York City. And I'm like, how do I sound? She says, you sound like you're 30 floors up outside New York City, which is to say not good. I don't know. I mean, we've been trying this for a while, right?
So like the one thing that I can say about this thing is that the microphone was really, really good. I mean, like, it sounded like every time that I recorded it and played it back or I called someone on the phone and talked to them, it didn't sound like I was on a really crappy speakerphone. Like, it sounded like a really nice, you know, the quality was really good there. So, I mean, there are parts of this thing that I thought were really nice. The display density was one of those things that I appreciated because this is a slightly denser screen than what we've seen in previous models. You know, so it was something that if it wasn't just so bulky and horrible to wear, it would have been really good. The parts that worked really well.
So, I mean, we're gonna finish our review of this thing, right?
No.
Even though you can't actually buy it.
That was the review.
That was
the review.
The review will be a hangout sound bleeping out swear words in your hand.
I was legitimately going to make the hero for this review this watch in a trash can. Like, I really can't stand this thing on my wrist. As soon as I got that email, like, I can't describe to you what happened as I flung this thing off my body in the car.
It was so bizarre. I was just walking into the house and, like, had arms full of crap, and Russell's just, like, you can hear him making noises through our, you know, through Slack, through our chat system, just, somebody's going to GIF that, I know. Great.
Yep.
It's stranger things have happened, but not many.
You know, though, this I think in the end, this is going to turn out to be for the best.
No, it'll be fine.
Because LG's not going to stop. They're going to make another one.
And the next one they're going to make is going to be way better
because they're going to listen to Russell swear and everybody else complain. And no, really, these companies...
Look at how far Samsung went between the Gear S and the Gear S2. It's a world of difference.
They sift through all the hate online and find people that have legitimate gripes and investigate what it would take to address them. That's how
I would be happy to be nice about it and talk to LG about it, but anyone who's seriously considering keeping one of these things is, one, wrong for buying it in the first place.
Right, they just gave you a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Right. Take it back, and you will be happier in the long run, I promise.
And Phil likened this to that NVIDIA tablet that had an issue where it was unsafe and it might catch fire, and there was a hardware recall. We're not saying this thing's going to catch fire. Well, he said that to me. He didn't say that to everybody.
Right, just you.
We're not saying this is going to catch fire or anything, but it is the same type of issue there is a reason LG doesn't want you to have this. Take it back.
And, you know, LG doesn't take that lightly. They wouldn't recall every single one and tell them to be pulled off the shelves.
The same week that it, yeah.
They wouldn't do that unless there was a legitimate reason for them to do that.
Especially, what, 6 days before Black Friday?
Yeah.
And especially dealing with, you know, with the importance of carrier relationships with a new class of device. You know, it would have been in LG's best interest to make sure this launch goes as smoothly as possible to kind of, you know, smooth the way for, I don't know, what are the next ones called? You know, the LG Watch Urbane Second Edition LTE 2 or whatever. You don't spend that good with the carriers and then just bail in the last minute if there's no other option.
Nope, you do not.
I would imagine the carriers were involved in this decision too. You know, the LG didn't just do it and then all of a sudden tell them, well, you can't sell this anymore.
Because the carriers are, you know, the carriers are the ones selling it. They have to pick up the customer service burden on this too.
Yeah, it's not a small thing by any stretch.
You know, they were selling watches expecting to have to support them for 1 or 2 years.
I want to move on from that and throw Russell a bone, maybe. This might set him off too.
Don't do it.
He's not here.
As soon as you said it, I know where you're headed.
Oh.
Everyone will be happier.
Let's talk about how Lloyd looks over my shoulder back there. Where is he? Can I point? There he is. Hi, Lloyd.
But yeah, do you want to talk about it real quick?
The Samsung Gear VR for, you know, is this, are they calling this like the second gen or the new gen or anything?
This is officially just like the first gen as far as the public's concerned.
Okay, so it's now on sale, $100 at Best Buy, if you can find one.
No, you can't find one until the 25th.
Oh, really?
No matter what anybody tells you, including people who work in the store who swear up and down on multiple days that they will have them on the 20th. They'll be available on the 25th. They're available for pre-order right now on Best Buy and on Amazon. And they will both be shipping if you order them online, which you should do because people who go into brick-and-mortar stores are liars. So this is something that we'll be talking about, I guess, in 2 weeks, after I've had some time to get to know all the new software. They've slowly, if you own an Innovator Edition, they've slowly started, you know, kind of moving out some of the new software that they've done over the past couple weeks, but a bunch of it doesn't work with older versions of the Innovator Edition. The Note 4, for example, can't play the Land's End game, can't play the Gunjack game. One or two of the streaming apps don't work for it yet, and Samsung is super lazy about their user interface there and just grays out the blocks that you can't install.
Of course.
So the core interface is just a bunch of gray blocks if you are using a Note 4 with the Innovator Edition right now. But the final version is going to come out, and I'm still genuinely excited about the hardware because it's only $100, and it's going to do a whole lot more than cardboard does.
So the Innovator Edition was $200.
Right.
Nobody should buy one of these. Zero people should buy one, and then version 2 will be able to work on more than Samsung phones, and that will be better for everyone.
No, okay.
I mean, here's the thing with just that concept in general, right? You still have the issue where the core problem is the fact that you have to play for 30 minutes at a time because the thing that's doing all the processing and is in the front is overheat after that time and you're not able to do anything. That is the kind of the major problem there.
I just ordered one.
Thanks, Phil.
But I kind of get the impression
we all thank you.
Don't even go there.
You
can't make a hardware platform like this open and have it functional at the same time. Unless you double the size so that it'll sort any size that's there. You make the lenses adjustable so that they support any size device that's there. And then you work for an entire another year after right now to support all the different gyro functions from all the different hardware manufacturers that are supported.
Or you might maybe
have something that works the same way that it works right now.
And then it catches fire because you put a Snapdragon 810 phone in it.
Right.
Or you support the standard. And let hardware manufacturers.
That works super good for Google with their cardboard app that is 9 times out of 10 jittery and janky as hell compared to the Gear VR.
It's 10 times out of 10 not working at all here. Give me 1,000 Gear VRs and it won't work.
Have any of us, Russell, is there a change in this visor versus the Innovator?
They've made it a little smaller. I don't know whether they kept the fan from the second version of the Innovator Edition.
They made it smaller by removing a lot of the padding and the extra straps.
They changed the D-pad a little.
I mean, it's been a while. It's been more than a year since I used the, you know, like one of the early ones. I guess that was the Note 4 event Andrew and I were at.
They've gotten a lot smaller since that original one, that's for sure.
I'm really curious to try it. And are my kids going to be pissed? Like, are they going to be able to use this?
No, it specifically says when you turn it on not to let anyone under the age of 14 use it. And we talked to Dr. Joe about it, Jerry and I did, a while back. This is one of those, it directly encourages you to wear it for longer than 10 or 15 minutes at a time by strapping it to your head. So the chances of it doing harm over time is a little higher, and is not quite as safe for kids as cardboard.
All right, my youngest has walked into a wall while doing cardboard, so.
Yeah, you don't
want this. She really did. It was so cute. I'm like, will you please watch where you're going? No, but I mean, seriously, will it work with kids, or is there something about the size and shape of it that's not... And I'm not
saying it's roughly the same size as cardboard. So, I mean, functionally, when it comes to fitting it to them, it's just the strap tightening so that it fits their head. But it's, you know, anyone under the age of 14, Samsung and Oculus have pretty clear warnings saying not to mess with those. I mean, if you put it on them for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes and you're pretty closely monitoring them, you're fine.
Yeah. Nobody tell my kids, but I'm going to get two of those ViewMaster things.
Yeah, those things are awesome. So, I love that thing.
Guess what dad's getting you?
Yeah, because, and ViewMaster doesn't have, like, the cardboard crumple zone when you walk into a wall with it. So
it'll be even more entertaining. No, it's just hard plastic.
Right. They'll have shards coming out of their head. This is, like, the most violent podcast we've ever done. We're melting hands, faces are catching fire. What else?
Very real worries.
Yes.
I just wish it only worked with T's, and then I could hear what Russell had to say then.
Give it time.
If it worked well, then there is a market point for it.
I'm sure you see mine, too. You just like to argue because you're
Russell. I see cardboard as the answer there. I don't think Samsung should make a cardboard competitor. I like that they are going for that step above because no one else is. And you have to be discerning about the hardware that you choose for an experience like that. It sucks that it's only Samsung. There isn't a technical reason why there couldn't be a, you know, 5-point-whatever-inch range for things with micro USB to fit in it, but I also kind of get it.
And if you're talking about gaming, then you kind of need a certain baseline of hardware to be in there. And if you're Samsung and you can limit to maybe Note 4 and up, which, you know, is a reasonable amount of processing power, even if it does kind of overheat after a while, then you're good.
And, hey, by the way, Samsung sells the lion's share of Android stuff out there. It was interesting. We were looking at Google Trends this morning, and what were we looking at? I put up the Note 5, the GS6,
Priv,
the BlackBerry Privs in the 6P, yeah, and it was really interesting. The Note 5 was a lot lower than I would expect it to be, but as Alex reminds me...
Oh, yeah, you can't buy a Note 5 in Europe.
I want to circle back when we're done.
You want to do what?
I want to circle back to Samsung selling the most devices when we're finished.
I think... the one that's not cardboard that will play, you know, that'll do this kind of high-end thing that we'll hopefully see next year. Jerry, you and I saw at the barbecue, which is the Ion VR.
Yeah.
And I'm really hopeful that when that launches in a tangible way, that it is a viable competitor for something like the Oculus headset here with Samsung. But they're still doing some really weird kind of hacky software stuff. So I'm going to wait before I get excited about that one. But that's the next thing for me to keep an eye on.
I'm excited because it's and I agree, it's a step above cardboard, and it's still, it's like an order of magnitude below something like Vive, like the HTC Vive. But again, that's a whole room.
Right. It's also, it's going to be priced in order of magnitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, people think of Vive as a headset. Vive is a headset plus a PC plus a bunch of sensors plus a whole bunch of software plus
wires,
a bunch of games. So.
Yeah,
how easy to grow tent and stuff to use. I want to remind Russell that Samsung sells the lion's share of Android phones, and most of them won't run the Gear VR because you're low end Samsung.
No, you're totally right. Yep.
That's true.
And that's a problem to me. And if it's not a problem to you, that's okay. I still love you. But that's a problem to me.
It is a problem in the long run, but it is not a problem for a first generation.
Yes, it is.
Well, in hardware, I mean, you got Moore's Law and all that. It's or rising tide, or you know, pick your.
I hope, and maybe I'm wrong. I hope Samsung is doing everything they can to make this product work for as many people as they can. That's all I want from it. If I bought a Galaxy S Mega 2 used from some guy in a with a push cart, I would love to be able to use Gear VR with it, and I can't. But I hope Samsung wants me to be able to, too, and they're working.
It's going to be real interesting, and Andrew was there with me at the last Samsung DevCon, which was just about a year ago, and we're not going to have another one until the spring. But a lot more open talk at that last one. I'll be really interested to see where it moves, if that continues, and what they've actually done in the open-y space. I think we might drag Jerry out to this one with us.
Yes, I want to go. And they have to be working towards that goal. Because it's beneficial to their bottom line, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And you know, the people working at Samsung are really smart people who want the best things for all of us. They're not just selfish guys counting pennies.
Further to that point, I recently talked to somebody about their Project Beyond 360 camera doohickey that they announced at the last DevCon. Yep. But now they're actually making it. And that's very much... they're just saying this is a camera rig that we've designed that anybody can use for any sort of VR viewer. If you want to throw it on YouTube, you want to make it available for Cardboard or Gear VR, it doesn't matter. They're just making a 360 camera rig that anybody can use for any application. And that's, you know, that's good to see that they're not restricting it into some kind of proprietary format that only the Gear VR can render or anything like that.
I want to tie one to the back of Jerry's chair and just, like, run around.
Dude, you know.
Push him down a flight of stairs.
And that's the thing. It just, all it has, well, this needs a little more, it needs a computer attached to it as well. It's very much a stationary
thing. We've got computers.
So, but basically, it just has a tripod screw on the bottom of it. And, you know, you just clip it into a tripod and it has a big data port. You plug into a computer and... just start streaming down your 360 video.
All right, let's take one more break. And when we come back, we will get into the Q&A. I have kind of a weird question I want to ask. And we'll see what else happens. But hang on, we'll be right back. TransferWise is the smart way to send money abroad. If you've ever tried to move money across international borders, you know it can be a real pain. Come on, you've done it, right? We all have. Banks and other providers charge hidden fees, often by marking up the exchange rate they give you, and that's unfair. TransferWise is different. There's a small percent fee on each transfer, and they give you real market exchange rate. That's the exchange rate that you see on Google or Bloomberg, and it's not the unfair rate that most banks use when you send money abroad. That's why TransferWise is up to 8 times cheaper than sending money abroad with your bank. Of course, you're not going to trust just anyone with your money, like me, but TransferWise is trustworthy. It's regulated by the same rules that apply to your bank. It's made by the people who built Skype, backed by investors like Richard Branson, and it's been trusted by people like you in more than 50 countries to send more than $5 billion overseas. Yes, that's $5 billion and counting. Ready to try TransferWise? Head to transferwise.com/android and your first transfer up to $500 will be free. I tell you what, let me ask my weird question. When we were doing the podcast last week, we started like right as all the stuff in Paris was starting to go down. And it was really odd because I'm sitting here watching Twitter like freak out. And it was pretty obvious it was going to be really bad and was going to be bad for a while. And we weren't really going to know what to do about it. So I didn't say anything during the podcast. But one question I did want to ask is the whole encryption thing came up about whether they were communicating via encrypted devices and should we have encrypted devices. And I wanted to ask you guys to give me like the 5-minute explainer of encryption with these phones and tablets that we use. And Jerry, we've talked about it before, especially like in the Nexus sense, because in the past year or so we've started with, you know, full disk encryption and all that stuff. So can you give me the 5-minute spiel on the difference between that and what they're talking about here? And is it something you think we need or shouldn't need? And I see Alex like shaking his head at me. Uh-oh.
See, this is a can of worms.
Yeah.
I can tell you the Jerry thoughts on it. How's that?
Yeah.
Some people in some governments want to be able to see what's on your phone whenever they want to, you know, grab your phone and take it. Full disk encryption keeps that from happening without your cooperation. they think that it's possible if they could have intercepted transmissions that may have been encrypted, or if somebody they had in custody may have had messages on their phones that they could have seen. This horrible chain of events may have not, you know, happened, may have been prevented.
Maybe not.
I can't weigh in on that because it's possible.
Sure.
Maybe it could have been prevented, but I just see the possibility for more bad things to happen if we are forced to let other third parties see and hear and think about everything we do or say online in all ways.
And I don't want us to be afraid to talk about this stuff because it's important, and it's something we already have, right? We already have encrypted devices. The iPhone's been encrypted even longer than Android devices have been. And there are, as we've very quickly found out, there are real world consequences to full disk encryption. And for a while, it was just really slow, janky devices for us, right?
Yes. I mean, it's overhead. It's going to slow everything down. It's just what level of slowness can you accept? You know, and that's what they had to work on. It's a lot better now.
And I guess the difference when you're talking encryption in like chat services, it would be a matter of if I hate to only pin it on governments because I doubt they're the only ones, but if somebody is picking the signal out of the air, and that's oversimplified, would they be able to read what it is you're saying in real time, basically?
If you and I are chatting on a method that's encrypted on both ends, I send something to you, the only way that can be read is with the correct encryption key, and you're the only one that has it because of our session that's initiated. When they pluck it out of the air, they have the data, but it's in a form that they can't do anything with unless they can brute force the encryption key, which may or may not be, you know, they may not be able to ever do that, or they may.
I get the argument of again, a government, you know, saying, hey, you know, guys, we might maybe need to be able to peek in on this stuff if there really is something bad happening, and we know there's something bad, you know, happening, but now we can't, and that's no good. Like, I get that argument, but
there's always the unintended consequence, though.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You're talking about potentially, you know, you don't even know. That's the thing. You don't even know what the upside is. That's what they're trying to convince you of, is that there's a big upside, but there's no tangible upside. You don't even know that if they had access to, you know, decrypt some forms of communication or devices, that would actually turn into a real, you know, tangible benefit to anyone. But you do know the downside. The downside is that they have access to everybody's communication.
The downside is whether you're, you know, you're talking with your friends, whether it be a Tea Party rally or a, you know, some sort of hippie, leftist, liberal, left-wing, crazy idea rally. Even if you don't agree with it, if you allow governments to unencrypt all data and block encryption methods, they're going to look at it. And if the government doesn't like it, they're going to stifle your freedom of speech.
And
this is the thing. That's kind of an important point there. You can't be a little bit encrypted. It is either all the way encrypted or not encrypted. This isn't like a slider where you can say only the good guys have access to stuff that's encrypted, because that's not the way encryption works.
And as soon as there's a backdoor, it's a backdoor for anyone.
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't matter if there's a backdoor that they think that, oh, the government has a special key to get in. No, as soon as there's a way to get in, there's a way to get in, and somebody else is going to figure it out.
In the most cases, I know BlackBerry is a good example. I think it's India has the keys. They can check, but they don't. They don't randomly, or at least they say they don't routinely check this stuff. But if they need to, they can go in. But that is a very special case. What the people advocating for the death of encryption now want is to just do away with encryption.
Yeah, and the people saying that don't understand how encryption, this is the whole problem with people who don't understand tech making tech policy. You don't, if you want to do away with all encryption, then that is a terrible idea for a number of really obvious reasons, if you have even the slightest understanding of how this stuff works.
Well, and then we have this other issue of across different countries, across different continents, you know, data flows freely between, you know, the internet is not tied to, you know, there are no borders on the internet like that. And as soon as you start requiring some kind of level of backdoor decryption or anything on, you know, in the UK or, you know, in Sweden or in Russia, in Turkey, it doesn't matter. It goes out the door as soon as that data moves somewhere else. And what happens if the data is coming from somewhere else? You know, this is, we've run into this, or we're currently running into this issue with, you know, data protection laws for somebody like Google or Yahoo or Microsoft. You know, they don't store data from UK customers just on one server in a room in the UK. It's distributed and all over the place.
So Russell's being real quiet, which usually leads him to dropping some sort of knowledge bomb on us. That was a really poor choice of words. Sorry, but you know what I mean. What you got?
Nothing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Encryption is a fundamental human right as far as I'm concerned. And people who disagree don't understand the technology. And I don't have anything else to say on it.
I just
this is Russell. This is Russell in the dark, by the way.
we're back to the dark side.
Everybody that thinks we shouldn't be allowed to encrypt our data in all shapes and forms, do you want me to know everything you say online? Me, personally. Do you want me to? Because if you think we don't need encryption, you're saying that, yeah, Jerry,
you need to not have that limit to be online either.
Well, right.
I mean, that's we have, when we kind of laugh every once in a while when we hear crazies talk about the ability to breach your phone and listen from your microphone and take pictures on your camera without your knowing. Encryption is one of the things that keeps that from happening. Not full disk encryption per se, but it, you know, the way that APKs are signed to keep people from messing with them, the way that you know, data is encrypted as it travels across your network. You know, there are many different kinds of software encryption, and all of those things are important. The way that they function with one another is important, and the way that they keep you safe is important.
And for the record, I'm on the side of encryption as well, I think. And I'm posing these questions because I think we shouldn't be afraid to talk right about them.
I really want to know, Russell, what would John McAfee think?
Oh, man. Why did you do that?
I don't even think John McAfee knows what he would think, to be honest.
No, I mean, I think we need encryption, and the cat and mouse game will continue, and make him brute force it. Put my tax dollars to work. Brute force the sucker.
We'll do that no matter what.
Well, sure.
Well, that's the thing. Even if they, you know what? I can help you. If you need to encrypt your messages to make sure nobody else is reading them, we can help. Holler at me. It doesn't even need to be built into your phone or built into your network. There will always be encryption for people that need to encrypt their stuff.
To be perfectly clear, I've worked for a company where we've gotten police requests on a regular basis saying, hey, we need your help with this information. And, you know, there were really hard limits to the kind of information we were allowed to provide, even when we had access to more, you know, for a lot of different legal reasons. And I get, you know, I've seen these requests and they're pretty detailed. And you know, so the kind of cases where they request this kind of information, there's usually a lot going on. And the desire to help, from my perspective, was really high. You know, it's not, you know, me being, or any of us really being anti-government or anti-police or anything like that. It's that there has to be a dividing line somewhere. It has to exist somewhere.
And I think, again, I think it's a conversation we need to have every now and then and not be afraid to do it.
And it's something everybody listening to this podcast needs to think about.
Any of you guys use, like, actively, you know, I forget the name of it, one of the chat apps just came out for Android, one of the ones that Snowden recommended or something like that. Do you guys use any actively, like, this is an encrypted app, use it, sort of thing? You don't have to say if you don't want to.
But. Anything that I receive or transmit on my cell phone, I instantly write off as available.
Yeah.
On the computer, I use some encryption on certain things and communication with certain people. But I consider my cell phone as wide open because, yeah, I could lose my cell phone and somebody could get lucky enough that they're the one that breaks the encryption and then there they have it all.
If two people know it, right?
Yep.
Ain't a secret. All right, Q&A. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring everybody down. We were having a lot of fun. But it's important.
We're not down. Serious topics are not downers.
Good.
Nope. Gotta have them.
Good. Jorge. I assume you're Jorge and not George with a J. I'm just saying. Will Google eventually separate security updates from the core system to bypass the carriers?
I mean, that you can't really do that without, because security updates are Android, right?
And they're updating the system.
Yeah.
It's pulled out as far as it can be right now.
Yeah.
They're providing enough data for any company that builds phones to make a patch that can be sent out without affecting the network stack at all. The carriers just have so much control they can still hold it up.
A lot has been spun out into play services anyway. A lot of the stuff, exactly. If it's an app level exploit, if it's a malicious app doing something, then that can be mitigated to a certain extent, not completely eliminated, by play services and the fact that the app scanning stuff whenever you install an app, or all this other stuff that goes on the, like, above Android, on the play services side of things.
And again, exactly multiple layers of security and stuff. So
yeah,
Google takes this very, very seriously. They have too much to lose not to. The problem is, I mean, Android is just a bunch of software source code. That's all Android is. And in the end, AT&T has a say in how it's used and how it's built. So that's just the way Android works. Google is doing the best they can. I hope they can figure something out.
And by the way, we just put up a story this afternoon, the HTC One A9 in the U.S. should be getting the November security update, like, anytime now. I don't have a U.S. one. Wait, I've got a European one here.
The unlocked only.
The unlocked, yeah.
Unlocked only in the U.S., like that one SKU. So, yes. I mean, actually, kind of, I was expecting them to go for 15 days for the platform updates, the numbered updates, and then we get the big PR win out of that. It's a big deal that they're actually going after that for these, less sexy, security updates that they can change the version number. But, it's good they're doing, even if, there's some kind of funny logic going on there with real days versus business days.
But these are the important updates. The ones that change the UI from dark to light add. They don't mean jack squat. These are the updates that we need to be screaming for.
Yeah, and like I was saying, in the normal, rational, sane world of computing where, you prioritize things according to that, a security update is way more important, right? It's way more important that you get that out in 15 days or 15 business days than it is something that gives you, new features or whatever. It's good that they're doing this for both sides of that.
I'm impressed, actually, and I'm sorry, Phil.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
After all the complaining and doubts I've had, I'm impressed with HTC, LG, and even Samsung. I wish Samsung would care about a few more of the 56 devices they currently make, but I did not think that any of these companies would care about security updates at all because there's no money in it.
I mean, look, you want to go back to HTC. HTC has already said that it isn't – I forget the exact term that was used, but it was Jason McKenzie, I think, that said it wasn't feasible, or some words to that effect, to do monthly security updates. So they've already written it off, except for that one SKU. Samsung is a little bit more open to doing things, but still it's going to be your Galaxy S6s, your Note 5s that get the updates, and you guarantee the less profitable devices are going to be the ones that fall back. So it's not perfect there either. LG is still kind of up in the air, and Motorola and others have their own update issues, so it's not perfect across the board. And I think the rule is still, if security is a priority, then Nexus is where you need to be.
I mean, Motorola can impress me when the Moto E gets the November security patch. If you don't do that, Motorola, you're dead to me. I mean, sorry.
And we said from the beginning this wasn't going to be easy, no matter what. Right. Whoa, dropping stuff.
But I do as much complaining as I do, and I'm going to keep complaining in the hopes that my little bitty rants, somebody's listening and saying, "Oh, Jerry's right. We should work harder." But I do want to say that they have impressed me, even slightly, but they have.
Daniel Kelly asks, is the NVIDIA Shield Tablet K1 the Nexus 8 2015 that everyone was asking for? Is it essentially a Nexus tablet?
I mean, no. Let's not get carried away here. It's not a Nexus tablet in any way. It's a good tablet, especially for $200, but I mean, just it's not a Nexus. Just because it looks like it has relatively stock software doesn't mean that it's a Nexus tablet. There's different baggage there altogether.
They've been pretty decent about updates, right?
Oh, yeah. This one's going to get Marshmallow in the next month. I mean, that's not bad. It's a little annoying that it's shipping with Lollipop, but they only have two SKUs now. They have the old one, which is technically end of life, that's going to get one more update, and they have this one that's the same. and they're doing one size, no LTE option. I mean, it's going to be relatively easy, and it's Wi-Fi only, so you know, it's going to be relatively easy for them to get the updates out the door. And based on the last one, the thing just gets smoother and more powerful with each update.
They're in the point where they may even need to slow down on the updates a little bit. They've sent out a few that were, you know, introduced problems along with fixing some. So as far as the updates go, the time is good. The quality needs a little bit more work, but they have deeply integrated so many of their services into the systems. Excuse me. I'm willing to give them an extra few weeks because they're going to need.
And that's the reason why it's not a Nexus tablet. I mean, when you have all of the, you have Twitch baked in, you have all their controller support, their gaming stuff, you know, all the special stuff they do for their CPU and GPU that's a lot different than everybody else's. You know, it's not like they just have a off-the-shelf Snapdragon in there.
Gaiath, and I hope I'm pronouncing this properly, asks, have you guys looked at the GeForce Now service from NVIDIA? If so, how is the input lag?
I used it before it was rebranded GeForce Now. It was, what was it called before?
Their streaming stuff?
Yeah, it was called, I think it was called Grid before.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Grid was like the server and yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is.
Perfect time. I used it last night for the first time. It's a crazy thing. I'm using an unsupported wireless keyboard and mouse. Input lag using the Shield Portable through the computer I was using it on was less than using the keyboard and mouse that's physically wirelessly attached to the system. Huh. I was amazed. And I'm just using one of those cheap little Alienware Steam boxes that I shoehorned the old version of Windows back onto.
Yeah. And
I was impressed. With the proper rig, I think that can be a viable thing.
So I used it a lot back when it was Grid still, so it was still in beta technically, and it was only available to people in certain, you know, geographies. It worked great on both the Shield tablet and the Shield TV because, I mean, so this is with, I have an internet connection with single-digit pings, which definitely helps with the latency, but I've had no real issues. I mean, you can tell it tries to degrade gracefully if you hit a little hiccup in your internet, and it could be tough if you're playing like a first-person shooter or a racing game or something. You do notice those drop-offs, but you're also talking about a service that's what, like 10 bucks a month or $8 a month or something for, you know, all you can stream games.
Oh, see, I'm confused. I thought we were talking about the put the game on your computer and play it on your Shield.
No, I'm
not the internet streaming.
He's talking about GeForce Now, which the internet streaming one. Which
I haven't used that one. Sorry. I'll shut up now.
I've used the internet streaming one is far more, I think, general consumer ready. You know, there, like Jerry was saying, there are, you know, lots of required keyboard, required router, required graphics card and stuff for the home, in-home streaming. But this is just over the internet. You just, on the Shield tablet, the Shield TV. I think if you don't care about, you know, multiplayer online gaming and, you know, having like an Xbox Live or a, you know, Steam online gaming or anything, I think it's awesome. But it's not a perfect replacement for having a console, you know, a new console or even a computer behind your TV doing the big stuff.
Fair enough.
Long way to get there, but that's
Where did it go? I lost it. Ben wants to know thoughts on the new Google Plus. And I was going to totally have a Russell style rant on this because I'm not enjoying it at all. But Russell would remind us that it is very much still in beta and what we have access to now is kind of unfinished.
So I get that part, but I also, I mean, the next day after they launched it, they were offering everyone the new UI. I mean, if this is not opt-in, I mean, it was it is opt-in technically, opt-in, yeah. but it was presented to everyone to say, let's go, like, click this and everything will change. And if it was actually as beta as they say it is, don't do that. Make everybody go into the settings and flip a toggle and do that.
I just can't get over like the old gingerbread style buttons on the bottom of the app.
The mobile app is more assaulting my eyes than the website. The website, you have so much more room to work with, and I'm getting a little used to having that, you know, it's right justified because the left bar is now permanently out.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing. But on the phone, the app is just not... That, I mean, again, if the like if that is like the beta experience, that shouldn't have been pushed as an update to every iOS and Android user the second day.
I love it. Mm. Because I can have the tab open on my computer and Hangouts doesn't beep.
Sure.
Exactly.
I don't care about anything else. That's beautiful.
So we kind of saw that coming when they rolled out the hangouts.google.com, you know, web interface, and that made a whole lot of sense. That's way better. You know, I know a lot of people still use Hangouts and Gmail, for God's sake, and that's the worst experience ever. But I don't know. I don't really have a huge problem with it, and it sounds like a lot of people that are they love the communities and stuff are really into it. I don't really use collections myself on Google Plus, so I don't really know how that's changed. But as far as like just the general feed view goes, it just feels like, you know, for somebody that doesn't go that deep into Google Plus, it feels like just a slight change of UI. It doesn't feel like a crazy shift.
Alex, do you care at all?
A little bit. I mean, like Andrew was saying, there's no crazy, you know, people saying it's a little bit more like Reddit, in which case maybe it is with collections and stuff. But I guess really what it shows is that Google isn't in a hurry to abandon Google Plus. I mean, you don't know how long in the work this change has been, but for the most part, it's business as usual with a slightly different UI, and on Android, you know, a slightly weirder UI with buttons in places that only you wouldn't find buttons.
Yeah,
so
a slightly less useful UI.
Yeah.
Pablo wants to know about the Nexus Player. We get this question like every week now.
Because it's on sale.
I know. Is it worth getting for half the price? Again, I say if you want...
What's half the price? $50?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you get for $60 in some places now.
If you want like a Chromecast-y experience with a good lean-back menu in an actual remote control instead of your phone, yeah.
If you
man, Jerry,
I know. If you like to watch YouTube on your TV at home, it's worth $60.
Yeah,
that if, for that alone. After that, the usefulness is debatable.
Crossy Road. Yep. I'm just saying.
And that's the only game you can install because it has 8 gigs of storage.
Well, yeah, yeah. Actually, that's the bigger issue is the storage.
Yeah,
but I mean, I've still got half a dozen games on mine.
Just temper your expectations, and sure, $50.
Yeah.
Or like I think they were on sale for like $30 or $40 from Target a couple weeks ago. Like that's a fine price.
Yeah, if you can get it cheap and you need that sort of experience, yes. All right, one more. Where'd they go? Mitch wants to know, are we approaching the day when even the smartphone enthusiast isn't chasing the yearly flagship? As with computers, we know about the Xenon and 980 Ti, but we build an i5 and a 970 for ourselves, etc. Let me ask you this. What if specs are no longer the thing to chase in a flagship device?
And they're not.
They have been for a couple of years now, I think.
I think even for me this year... the mid-range has been where things, like what I call the new mid-range has been where things have been getting really interesting. With devices like the Moto X Pure, which isn't a traditional high-end phone in the sense that it costs $600-$800, but it provides most of what you need for a phone, and there are only maybe one or two areas where it's a little less capable than phones that cost a significant amount more. So I think just in terms of me as a technology enthusiast, and the products that I find interesting, it's really been about the changes that have been happening at that price point than, you know, the high end, which of course is always going to be awesome.
I just know anytime we talk about specs, and I get that they're important to a lot of people, I want to remind you that at one time, this phone available in the world with the highest specs was the HTC Aeris on Verizon.
I think it's a beast, too.
Yeah, it had better specs than anything running Windows Mobile or any of the iPhones. And, you know, compare the experience.
And I guess the question at the core there is, are we reaching the point of diminishing returns with smartphone hardware? And in a lot of cases, yeah. Your screens can only get so dense before you can't really tell the difference anymore. I'm sure we'll see more 4K phones the next year. But, you know, do you need beyond that? Probably not. You know, there are limits to human vision. There are limits to the size of the human hand. So eventually you're going to run up against biological limits there. Beyond that,
according to some of the people who yell at me, there's no limit to the size of your hand, and you should just have the biggest fan possible.
Well, those people are wrong, but I mean, the areas that can improve, right, are the things that we're still seeing problems with now, like battery life. You know, that's a really interesting area. And if you go back and read our Futurology series earlier in the year, a lot of interesting work going on there to make phones actually reliably last a day or more than a day in some cases.
And
cameras can always get better.
You know, we've already seen looking at the milliamp hour rating of battery isn't the whole story at all. I mean, phones with the same size battery as 2 years ago are giving 30% more battery life because the processors have gotten more efficient, the screens have got more efficient, and you know, you just have to look at it as a holistic experience, or you know, in different categories, pick out the different things. I mean, I look at, I've been using the OnePlus X, which, has a quote unquote old processor as a Snapdragon 801. Oh my God. Instead of a Snapdragon 615, because it's, that would be the new mid-range chip. But it's completely fantastic. It doesn't need a brand new mid-range processor if it can have an old high-end processor.
It's funny. I was talking to, we published our interview this week with Steve Kondik of CyanogenMod. And he was saying that the 801 was still his gold standard for what a high-end phone should be and what should be powering it. None of the issues that we see with some of the high-end chips this year, still very capable of handling 32-bit Android. And actually, that kind of, relates to what Andrew was saying with where we are with the OnePlus X now. If you have Lollipop properly optimized on that hardware, or with the phone I've been using a little bit over the past week with Sony and their concept ROM for the Xperia Z3, year-old hardware, fair enough. But with the right software on it, fantastic experience.
The Moto G says hello. That little phone. I think all of us here are in agreement that out of the box, before you monkey with it, the Moto G offered one of the best Android experiences you could get.
Versus the Moto G has a better out-of-box. Sorry, the Moto G has a better out-of-box experience than the Moto X Play, right? It's
right.
Less laggy. It's, half the screen resolution, but, more responsive as a result.
And it's somebody took the time to tailor the software to the hardware they were going to use. And that does a lot.
That leads into one question I promised Jerry we would read out of the email. And that was from Kofi. He says, what do you think that Snapdragon 820 will bring to the table in Android and the Android community? Will it make 60 frames per second on 4K? A better experience, better than the 810 or the 808? Lag-free performance, still rely on better software optimization? So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here, right?
So I think an important thing there is going to be single core, right? Because yes, it's fewer cores. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be the dream there, I guess, for Qualcomm is it's going to be the crate of 64-bit. So what does that mean? It means that you have the edge that Qualcomm had in the 32-bit days over everyone that was using an A9 or whatever, like your Samsungs of the world. It means that they bring that performance edge that they had over that with their custom core design. So it means, compared to this year especially, it means that if they're designing their own core architecture from the ground up, basically they avoid a lot of the issues that they had this year with overheating. You return to a phase where the order of the smartphone chip world is restored, and Qualcomm kind of has the edge over everyone else a little bit, except maybe Samsung, because they have their own custom stuff in the works. But basically they have an edge over people who are using ARM designs, and as a result, better power consumption, better single core performance, and hopefully less just weirdness at the high end with heat generation and all this other stuff, and hopefully just better phones for everyone as a result.
And the way they do it, it's simply genius. It's order of execution. The 801, the 805, the chip processes the information request that it receives in the order that'll provide the best performance. The 810, the 808. They process that information in the order it's received. That means if easy tasks have to wait for difficult tasks to be finished. Qualcomm found a way around that with the crate cores. They didn't get to use the crate cores on 2015's chips. With the 820, they should be able to get back that edge. And it makes a big difference in a lot of cases.
That's a really, really nerdy way to end the podcast.
It's nerdy, but it really is as simple as I just said.
Yeah.
If you understand that, that's the difference. That's why the 801 is so doggone good.
And it's a reason, like Steve Kondik was saying in an interview that we ran this week, that the next generation of high-end stuff, the next generation of chips is going to be where the high-end gets really awesome again.
Right.
And that is, I think, a good place to end things.
So really, I mean, just a lot of good stuff to look forward to in 2016. That's what you're saying.
Right. Yep. And the software optimization that he mentioned in his email, too, that's going to happen. That's going to make it even better.
Excellent. Hey, by the way, I'm now in the dark.
Yeah, and I it's 4:30, man. Winter.
I know, it's not even 4:30 here. Well, I've got my blinds closed right in front of me because the sun comes in until the sun is down. So anyway,
I put hydroponic vegetable growing lights above my head.
La 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 la.
Vegetables. I use them to grow coral. Coral. I can't help it if people do bad things with stuff. I grow coral.
Jerry is a fish guy, or yes, a fish tank guy, I should say.
I am.
Oh, my kids call him all the time with questions.
I have fish tanks everywhere doing all kind of crazy stuff.
All right, that's going to do it for this week. As always, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. We've got BlackBerry Priv stuff in there for those of you who have the Priv. How much longer do you guys think the Priv's going to... That's why we were looking at that Google Trends chart earlier today, because it's very much riding a wave. Do you think it's going to stay up there for a while?
I think eventually everybody that wants one is going to have one, and the rest of the people are going to not want to hear it anymore. That's my expert analysis.
I don't disagree. So next week, it is Thanksgiving week for us here in the U.S., so we will not be doing a live show next Friday.
Alex will do a solo live podcast for an hour and a half.
90 minutes of me talking and looking into a camera.
I have never attempted a solo podcast, nor do I want to. I think Dan did once, Dan Rubino, a long time ago. Or maybe it was Dieter, I forget who, but yeah, I'm not doing that. So we will have a podcast, though, so look out for that. What else is going on? Android history, historyofandroid.com. Just go there.
A lot of stuff coming up in the next 7 days on that.
My interview with LG's Dr. Wu. I'm excited about that. I went back and listened to it again the other day.
We also have a really interesting interview with Jim Wicks from Motorola, who has a long title to do with user experience and design and stuff that I can't remember, but interesting guy, really been with Motorola since 2001, and a lot of interesting insight we had in our interview with him this week. So
again, Alex is doing a really awesome job with this series. Like, if you wonder why he hasn't been writing much the past couple months, this is why. So it's taken a lot of work. So very, very cool. Very cool. So that's it. We got more stuff coming up, I guess. Go follow us on the Instagrams and the YouTubes and all those things.
I've got a OnePlus X that I'll have a review done for your light reading over the
How you holiday. Like that HSPA Plus, bro?
I'm loving it. HSPA for life.
You know, it's not going to matter in the scheme of things, but I've got a Lumia 950 XL on the way that I should have next week. I want to play it. It's been a long time since I looked at Windows.
Don't take it out of the box. It'll be worth something.
I want to try it. So, with that, everybody who does the Thanksgiving thing, happy Thanksgiving. Have a good one. Everybody be cool to each other. I need a hug. I'm going to go see my kids. It's been a long week for a lot of people. So, hang in there. Be cool. And we'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
See you later.
Outstanding episode of the Android Central podcast was brought to you by Braintree. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. It's got quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have any questions. Start accepting Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and whatever's next, all with a single integration. Don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at BraintreePayments.com/AndroidCentral.